耳。
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Governor Kathy Hochul announced last night that an agreement has been reached with legislative leaders on key priorities in the fiscal year 2026 New York State budget. But is it really done? Patricia Roballo is here with the latest from one local lawmaker and what comes next. Feeling like Monday always wins, you're not alone, but you don't have to stay stuck there. This week, we're chatting with Maggie and Megan from the You Can Trust Yourself podcast about how to stop dreading the work week and build routines you actually enjoy and start trusting yourself to create a life you're excited about. And you think you can tell powerful stories in just 2 minutes? The Too Short to Suck Film Festival is back in Parksville. The deadline for submissions is coming up. Plus, culture reporter Valerie Manzi with two big literary events. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump is marking his first 100 days in office today. Tonight, he'll hold a rally outside Detroit to tout his accomplishments since taking office. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent talked with reporters at the White House this morning. He says Trump's tariffs on foreign imports will help bring back U.S. manufacturing. Bessent says the tariff war between the U.S. and China is one that China cannot win because China could quickly lose up to 10 million jobs.
We are the deficit country. They sell almost five times more goods to us than we sell to them. So the onus will be on them to take off these tariffs. They're unsustainable for them.
Stocks open mixed this morning. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average has fallen a little more than 7% since Inauguration Day.
One of the goals of President Trump's trade war is to close the nation's trade deficit. But new figures from the Commerce Department show the deficit widened in March as U.S. businesses and consumers raced to get ahead of the president's tariffs. Exports and imports both rose during the month, but imports jumped a lot more. The Trump administration is relaxing some of its tariffs on imported auto parts. General Motors postponed a conference call to discuss its economic outlook so company officials can assess the change. Coca-Cola sales dropped 2% during the most recent quarter, but the soft drink giant says profits were up. Coke says the effects of tariffs on its business are likely to be manageable. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The White House is criticizing a plan by big tech company Amazon. The online retailer apparently plans to show customers the amount of money that tariffs will add to the final cost of their purchases. The White House spokeswoman says President Trump has declared that this is a hostile and political act by Amazon. The spokeswoman says Amazon's site does not show the effect of inflation on prices. Amazon is a financial supporter of NPR. A new NPR analysis has found that President Trump has targeted more than 100 opponents and perceived enemies in his first 100 days in office. NPR's Tom Dreisbach has more.
The Trump administration has used government power against a wide range of targets, including law firms, universities, media organizations, and student protesters. Trump has also personally ordered criminal investigations into former officials he considers disloyal. Sean Brennan is a former federal prosecutor who was fired for prosecuting people who attacked the Capitol on January 6, 2021.
I was retaliated against for taking actions that were well within the law, but that were politically unfavorable to the people in charge.
The White House maintains that Trump is ending the weaponization of government while also getting accountability. Tom Dreisbach, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow is up 130 points. This is NPR. Illinois State Police say yesterday's deadly car crash near Springfield does not appear to be an intentional act. A motorist drove a car into a building that was hosting an after-school program for students. Three children and a young adult were killed. Erica Joe was a witness. She says the vehicle smashed all the way through the building.
There's a perfect entry hole and a perfect exit hole, almost like a bullet wound would be.
Authorities say the driver has not been identified and was taken to a hospital for evaluation. The U.S. Navy says an incident at sea that resulted in the loss of a fighter jet is being investigated. NPR's Giles Snyder reports the jet slipped off the hangar deck of an aircraft carrier.
The Navy says the incident happened in the Red Sea aboard the USS Harry Truman, which has been involved in launching airstrikes against Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi rebels. In a statement, the Navy says sailors were towing an FA-18E Super Hornet into place when they lost control and the jet fell overboard, along with a small towing tractor. One sailor sustained a minor injury. The Houthi rebels claim to have launched an attack on the carrier group, and there are reports that Truman made a hard turn to evade Houthi fire. But it's unclear if that contributed to what happened, and the Navy says the Truman strike group remains fully mission capable. Super Hornets cost at least $60 million each. Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Thousands of Los Angeles city workers are in the middle of a two-day strike. They're demanding that the city fairly negotiate their next contract. Talks have been moving slowly. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Cigna Healthcare, a health benefits provider that advocates for better health through every stage of life. Learn more at Cigna.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Governor Kathy Hochul and New York State lawmakers have struck a tentative budget deal. From the New York Public News Network, WNYC's John Campbell reports the spending plan is nearly a month late.
The governor says the budget will be about $254 billion, but it'll include plenty of policy items that have little to do with spending, like a plan to prohibit public school students from using their smartphones during the school day. That's been a priority for the governor.
This budget is far more than a financial document. It's a declaration of our shared values.
Hochul says her office will finalize budget legislation in the coming days. Lawmakers are expected to begin voting later this week. The budget was due before April 1st. Since then, lawmakers have passed short-term extensions to keep the state funded. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
Governor Hochul called this a, quote, general agreement on the new spending plan, though she acknowledged there are some specifics left to be worked out before lawmakers begin putting it to a vote later this week. One of those lawmakers who will be voting on it is Paula Kaye, assembly member from the New York 100th District in our listening area. Our own Patricio Rubio just got off the phone with her, and he's here with more. Hello.
Yeah, good morning, Tim. Yeah, I just spoke to her about the budget, and, you know, when I first saw the news that it was announced, that's my first question was, is it finalized? And she was like, no, it's not. There's still a lot of work to be done. So she says a lot of the key spending details are still being finalized, and lawmakers, I said, she will be there for, in Albany for the rest of the week. She's not exactly sure when the budget will final vote for the budget will happen, but she will be there in Albany.
Let's take a listen to your conversation just earlier this morning.
We've been ready, willing, and able to address all of the governor's proposals. The governor wanted to, I guess, nail down the policy items that she had put into the budget before getting to any of the fiscal issues. I would say for the most part of the last 3 weeks, the discussion has centered on the discovery reforms to change the 2019 discovery bill back to a more balanced process that would actually take into account victims of crimes and also make sure that cases are not tossed because of mere technicalities when they don't have to be.
So an agreement has been reached. The budget has been finalized. Is that the current status of the budget?
No, that is absolutely not correct.
Okay.
The only thing that has been finalized are these policy issues that were inserted into the budget by the governor.
Okay. So what happens now? You're in Albany now to do what?
Sure, I am. Today's a session day. We're handling a number of important bills today, including medical aid to dying is coming up on the floor for the first time ever. And we also are continuing to conference on the budget. We've spent hours upon hours going through the budget as a conference since well before April 1st. And we are continuing to do that. There are a lot of items that still, as I said, need to be addressed on the fiscal, the financial, and that we do not have agreements on.
Okay. So, because the governor announced that there was a finalized budget, but you're saying that as the final numbers are not finalized. Is that my understanding right. it correctly? Okay.
Correct. There is no final budget as of right now.
And I see there's a report saying that the cell phone ban will be included in the budget.
Right. That was one of her policy initiatives, the bell-to-bell cell phone ban. Yes.
Right.
There were several initiatives. It was discovery, involuntary confinement, cell phone, handling the MTA.
Okay. And what about the mental health policies? Proposing expanding criteria for voluntary hospitalization?
So that's the involuntary confinement. So that's that's an interesting issue, especially as for us coming from an area where we are always looking for more medical providers and more assistance and more access to healthcare. I agree with the idea of trying to help people when they need help. But if we don't have the providers to do so, I think we're going to end up with a revolving door. I think it's a great idea, but we also need to follow up and provide funding so that we can have the providers to care for patients once they are brought to our hospitals.
And Paulo, if you could tell us, what is the next steps now to finalize this budget and put it behind us?
We have to actually go through all of the areas in the budget and make decisions on finances, that's hospitals, foundation aid, child care, which is clearly so important. We have to make sure we have child care slots in Sullivan and Orange counties and families have the ability to go to work and make money.
Now, Paula, this is your first budget as the assembly member. How was the experience? How has been the experience so far?
I certainly have learned a lot. What I would say is there's some definite highs and lows. One item that makes me particularly proud is I do have a piece of legislation that's going to be included in the budget, and that is part of the criminal justice package alongside the discovery reforms. There's also going to be some changes with regard to virtual arraignments. Right now, while defense attorneys and prosecutors can appear virtually, law enforcement has to bring a defendant to court, and that often involves hours and hours of time. And what this would do is allow, in certain circumstances, virtual appearances by defendants, saving time. And in many cases, after a virtual appearance, the defendant is then free to go. So it saves everybody time, and it'll really make a backlog in our justice system get a little bit smaller. And that's very important.
Right. Now, this week is going to be the votes for the budget, right, to finalize the budget?
I don't know yet.
You don't know yet. Okay.
Too soon to say.
Okay. So
I certainly hope so. We are here for the duration, and I don't know how long that will be at this point.
Okay. But please keep us up to date when that does happen. So thank you so much again. We'll talk to Assembly Member Paula Kay for the 100th District in New York. Thank you so much. I do really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And that was Patricio talking to Paula Kay just about an hour ago. And the governor is saying that things will be voted on this week. But as you just heard from the assembly member, they are not completely certain there of what that might look like. Also, lawmakers are saying that this budget was late because Governor Hochul insisted on including several policy proposals. But those proposals weren't adopted wholesale. And in fact, the policy items in this initial plan mimic her original proposals, including that cell phone ban. Now, we've covered this locally as well. Patricia, what's that cell phone ban, smartphone ban do?
Well, the cell phone ban will prohibit the use of smartphones and mobile devices from bell to bell, which means from the beginning of the school day to the end of the school day under an agreement, which was reached in March. And the individual public school districts will be directed to make their own policies on how devices are stored during the day beginning in September. And the state will offer some funding in to develop their plans. And like we reported in the past, some schools, districts here in Sullivan County already have some policies regarding cell phones.
And the governor is saying that policy will help improve teenage mental health, saying, quote, we protected our kids before from cigarettes, alcohol, and drunk driving, and now we're protecting them from addictive technology designed to hijack their attention, end quote. Another policy proposal was to spend $3 billion on $500 rebate checks to middle-class families. Now, that was pared back amid some resistance from lawmakers. What's now in this tentative budget?
Well, it said Hochul said on Monday that eligible families will now receive $400 checks, while individuals will receive $200 checks instead.
And State Senator Pat Fay, a Democrat from Albany, said she was glad that that plan had been reduced, saying, quote, we should not be writing out checks to the tune of $3 billion when we are we have our state programs eroded because of what's going on with Donald Trump. Now, she's alluding to the fact that this plan, which, by the way, is a $252 billion proposal. It grew an estimated $2 billion from her initial proposal. Now, Republicans and outside fiscal watchdog said that the budget doesn't do enough to constrain spending, especially in light of what these possible federal funding cuts and economic uncertainty are stemming from President Donald Trump's tariffs. They might have to come back later this year if the Congress and the federal government strips away funding.
Yeah, this is another thing that's sort of what's happening nationally is disturbing what's happening here locally. Such uncertain times financially in the budget season.
All right, Patricia Rubio on the New York State budget this morning, and we'll keep us posted as things develop and once they land on the final agreement. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, how to beat the Monday blues and keep your work week going. Megan and Maggie from You Can Trust Yourself, the podcast that we've been featuring now about how to stop dreading the work week. That's after this break. You're listening to Radio Chatsko.
This week on Latino USA, the Trump administration is imprisoning Venezuelan men with no criminal record in El Salvador. We hear from a mother trying to get justice for her son. That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Alliances have shifted.
I'm aligned with the United States of America and for the good of the world.
Markets have been sent reeling.
At the moment, we're living through extreme uncertainty.
President Trump has remade relationships with allies and adversaries alike and shaken the global economy. I'm Michelle Martin. Join me for a live special report from NPR News as we look at the first 100 days of the Trump administration and consider what's next.
Monday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, we've got Megan and Maggie here, the hosts of the You Can Trust Yourself podcast. Their latest episode is about helping you ditch the Monday dread and actually enjoying your week and not just survive it. Today, we're diving into real tips for building routines you actually want to stick to, getting some momentum, and trusting yourself to create a life you've been generally pumped about. Megan Spencer is a clinical mental health counselor in training. She specializes in working with women through person-centered approach. And Maggie Fitzpatrick is a coach specializing in optimizing mental and physical human performance. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi now. So it's Tuesday, and I still maybe have the Monday blues. What inspired this week's episode about reclaiming your Mondays and building that momentum through your week? Megan.
Oh, we were so excited to do this episode because all of us at some point can relate to having a really good weekend or just feeling like all the fun vibes and then being like, oh my goodness, I got to go back in on Monday. Here we go. And so we really wanted to dedicate an episode to this concept of the fun doesn't have to stop. How do we build in moments throughout our week that keep that momentum going that we still enjoy our lives throughout the week?
Let's dig into the episode a little bit more. You talk about the momentum being non-negotiable for folks stuck in a cycle of dread every Monday. What's the first small move they can make to build on that momentum?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important that we figure out what is valuable to us, right? What's important to us? Because even for the three of us here in this conversation, what's valuable to us on a Monday morning is going to look different for each of us, right? So for me personally, my momentum starts based off of what I do on Sunday. So on Sunday, it's really important for me to not only rest, but also set myself up for success by getting a good night of sleep, hopefully, and also starting to like brain dump everything that I'm going to need to do for the week, right? If I come into Monday morning feeling all frazzled because I hadn't had time to do a little bit of organization, I find that my week is a little bit, it goes a little bit less flowy, I'll say, you know, where if I have time to brain dump on Sunday, that helps me jump into Monday with a little bit more energy and also ease because I don't feel all over the place.
You mentioned that the first push matters. What's the first push and how can someone create that something that's doable rather than sort of overwhelming feeling, Megan?
Yeah. So the first push, Maggie actually came up with the visual of like lifting a heavy rock almost like down a hill. So like if you were to lift a heavy rock and give it that first push, the rest of that rock strip is just going to glide. And so Maggie used a lot of that framework to explain some parts of this week of when we do that push of what makes us feel good when we start our week. So for example, if for you that means, you know, getting a workout in or going and grabbing a coffee with a friend or getting a walk around, you know, your favorite park and taking in scenery that really is important to you. When we do that initial push of what fills us up with what we need, the rest of the week, it kind of sets the tone for the rest of the week of we don't have to dread this week. We still have our things that we love. Let's give it that initial push and get that momentum going.
You know, a lot of people talk about self-care. You guys frame it as actual progress rather than just like a break of self-care. Like, can you explain that idea a little bit more?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of times when we think about self-care, we think about stopping, right? If that makes sense, we're like, oh, how can I do things that are going to relieve my stress by stopping doing all of these stressful things, right? And I think if we look at it slightly differently, where we take the idea of self-care, but we look at it as things that make our life easier now and in the future, that it gives us a slightly different perspective, right? Because self-care can look like a bath or a walk or any of those things. And it can also look like buckling down and getting the thing done that you really needed to get done. So that way it's not looming and creating more stress, right? And I feel like when it comes to Monday morning, that's really important.
And you challenge this idea of a system that makes your life rigid. For someone who resists structure, how do you think they can rethink those routines to feel more freeing rather than suffocating or rigid?
That's a really good question. And as one who is that person that you were describing, who has a hard time with structure and too many timelines, I have to make it more fun for myself. And this is really silly, but I get out my little color-coordinated pen and I, you know, assign work a different color, personal life. And it's kind of a way for me that's been like a hack where I have some structure and some boundaries, right? And I make it fun. So when I have, you know, that one color of all my work type things, well, if my personal fun wellness color is purple, I make sure when I have, you know, a 20-minute slot, I put something in there that I'm really going to enjoy. So it's, I like to think about it as like, we have bumpers and some structure, but we can still make it fun for ourselves.
And so it's, as I said, Tuesday. How's this going for you? Did you guys set your Monday already? And how do you kind of do that? How you personally kind of own your Mondays?
Great question. So for me personally, this week is going much better than last week did, which is actually the entire reason for recording the episode, because last week I didn't feel like I had any momentum until about Friday. I don't know if you can relate to that, but that was my last week. So this week we did a much better job. For me, it's really important that I do my morning routine on Monday. So the rest of the week, if I do a really good job on Monday, for me, what that looks like is I like to do meditation. I like to read. I like to journal, exercise, those things. Those things are my fun. I don't know if you can relate to that, but those are my fun. And so when I do them on Monday, I feel clear mentally. I feel ready to go. I feel energized. And if I don't hit all of them on the rest of the week, it's not as big of a deal if I do them on Monday. So that's really important to me. And this week, I would say I was pretty successful.
Megan, what about you? How's it going so far this week?
I kind of love that it's opposite for us for this week. And this is something that I'm really happy you asked me to, because in the past, I have been someone, and I still can be at times, where if I don't, you know, a little bit perfectionistic, like, oh, I messed up my Monday. My Monday didn't go according to plan. So we'll just start over next week. And that is something that I've really had to challenge. So for this week, Monday was a little crazy, a lot of back-to-back sessions, traveling far away, just kind of a whole chaotic day. And today I have a little more real estate in my day and my options. So today actually feels more like a Monday for me. So for any of you listening who are like, well, I didn't really capitalize on my Monday, you can start any time throughout the week to just give yourself a reset of what makes you feel good and build that momentum for you to set the tone that you need.
Tuesday is the new Monday.
Absolutely.
But you mentioned Friday, Maggie. If some folks get stuck in the living for Friday or living for the weekend mentality, what's a mindset shift you can practice starting today to kind of get out of that?
Well, I'll give you some numbers. Okay. So when we were recording this episode, we were actually recording it, like talking, and I'm doing some math on the side because Megan brought up how, you know, a lot of us, we get into this cycle of living for the weekend. And well, if we're living for Saturday and Sunday, that's 29% of our life and 71% is the rest of the week. And so if we are only living for Saturday and Sunday, only excited about Saturday and Sunday, that's less than 30% of our entire life that we are choosing to enjoy, right? So we get to choose to enjoy the rest of it. Is it going to look exactly the same as Saturday and Sunday? No, of course not, right? Or whatever your days off are. But we can infuse some of those things that we love, that we choose to do on the weekend. We can choose to do them other days as well. And it'll help bring a little bit more enjoyment into the rest of those days.
I knew math would come in handy one day.
Yep. You got to do some math.
But I mean, when you think of that, I mean, definitely, I mentioned mindset shift. I'm like, oh, wait, just when you said that, I'm like, oh, yes, that I'm spending all this time focused on a small amount when I should try to focus on trying to find some other parts of this larger percentage to keep my momentum going.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what have you heard from some folks who found success and things that they're doing if, you know, they're listening to this advice, Megan?
A lot of our listeners will say that, you know, being able to implement things, it can give more like autonomy back into our weeks. And I really like the word that Maggie just used. She didn't use it on the podcast, but I'm like, ooh, I like that. Of like, how do we infuse some of this fun into our weeks? And so a lot of those who listen find that being able to find enjoyment in the everyday and the mundane, as silly as it sounds, of like, oh, you got to find joy in the little moments. Somebody really was onto something with that phrase. If we want to stop dreading our Mondays, we have to bring some of that weekend into our week. So for me, that looks like grabbing a coffee at a coffee shop or taking a walk or a hike midweek, whatever it may be. And a lot of our listeners will say similar things of finding what that looks like for them individually and then trusting themselves to implement it weekly.
I want to ask you both about another thing you guys mentioned in this podcast, picking up the rock of responsibility. What does that mean? And how do you know when to pick up that rock yourself?
Yeah, that's a really great question. We went off on a little tiny tangent, so we'll go here too. But
it sounds big, rock of responsibility.
Yeah, there were a lot of rocks in this episode, many rocks. Okay, so when we have all of these things that we are responsible for, right? And there's already plenty of them that we are responsible for. And what happens sometimes is we pick up other people's, right? And when we do that, we end up carrying way too many rocks and then we end up dropping them all, right? Because we not only have our own responsibilities, we've picked up everyone else's. And so how this tied into the episode was that in order for us to create momentum, we have to give other people back their rocks, right? We have to know when it's our turn to carry something and when it's not. And that can show up through delegation or teaching or coaching, right? And helping other people, whether it's people we work with, people we love, our children, it could be anyone, helping them take responsibility back for some of those things. So that way everyone has a little bit more momentum and we're not pushing everyone else along with ourselves.
Yeah. Megan, do you agree with that?
I do. And every time I hear Maggie describe that again, I like get all lit up inside again of that concept of it's so true and it's so common for so many of us to take on other people's things or rocks or little responsibilities. And what we talked about in this episode too is that sometimes it's little rocks. I use the example in the episode of like, you know, constantly checking to make sure your child has their sports equipment in their backpack every single day, right? And so we talked about that example of like, if we spend some time up front lifting that heavy rock of teaching them maybe how to set an alarm on their alarm clock to double check that they have it or whatever it may be, we do that heavier push in the beginning, but then long term, we are carrying around less little rocks, and therefore we may have more time for the things that I'm describing of going out and getting a coffee midweek or getting in a hike or going to those workout classes, whatever makes us feel good.
The episode is Stop Waiting for Someday. Momentum doesn't wait for motivation, and neither should you. We've talked about a couple of these mind shifts and ways of thinking about it. What's one thing you want folks to take away from this episode after listening to it that can help them to stop waiting for someday, Maggie?
I think the one thing for me is that we can make every day a little bit more enjoyable and a little bit more fun, and it's our choice, right? So I want you to think about, how can I make today a little bit more fun? How can I do something that makes me feel really good and helps me do everything else that I need to do better? It gives me more energy right now. How can I do that so that way the rest of my week goes a little bit easier, and just recognizing that we do have some control over that.
Megan?
Oh, it's so similar to what Maggie's saying. I think for any of you listening who are resonating with this content around, you deserve more than 30% of your week. So if all of your enjoyment is left for the weekend, 30% is not a great number in terms of our life and feeling alive. And so I think that's what I would say, is that you can trust yourself enough to enjoy life more than 30% of the time.
Big thanks to Megan Spencer and Maggie Fitzpatrick for hanging out with us today. If you love this conversation, go hit play on their podcast, You Can Trust Yourself. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, and also at our website, wjffradio.org. You can start making your Monday and every day something you look forward to. I'm going to go give back some rocks, I think. Thank you.
Go do it.
Thank you both. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, two big literary events coming up in the area. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi is on it, has more next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hi, this is Marco Werman, host of The World. Weekdays at 3, our newsroom connects you with events around the globe. Our reporters in the Americas, Africa, Europe, and Asia get to the heart of the day's news. We bring you international perspectives on issues worldwide and here in the U.S. It's 1 hour each day that broadens horizons and takes you beyond our borders. Join me on The World, afternoons at 3, on Radio Catskill.
On the next Radio Lab, the story of a piece of plastic we don't think about very often.
The cassette changed everything.
The cassette tape.
Cassette tapes were absolutely central in the Iranian Revolution.
The impact on China was just utterly profound.
I mean, you can draw a clear line from the cassette to the internet.
No.
Absolutely.
Join us for the third episode in our four-part series, Mixtape.
Wednesday at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to Aaron Hicklin of One Grand Books. He's also the host of Radio Catskill's Shelf Life, Sundays at noon. He's got two upcoming literary events in the area. First, Minds on Fire, with two authors exploring obsession, rebellion, and meaning. And Unnatural Disasters, a powerful panel on floods, forests, and fossil fuels. Here's Valerie.
Good morning, Aaron, and welcome back to Radio Chatskill.
Hi, Val. Lovely to be here.
It's always a pleasure to have you, and you always have interesting events coming up. And we're going to talk about two events, one coming up Saturday, May 3rd, and one on the 10th. So they are both collaborations. So let's start with the May 3rd. And that will be at the Catskill Art Space?
That's correct. You know, I've been excited about the possibility of collaborating with the Catskill Art Space for a while. And we actually have two collaborations One this Saturday, as you noted. This is an offshoot, really, of last year's Deepwater Literary Fest, and that takes place every June, the third weekend in June. This year, that will be June 20th to the 22nd. But last year's festival featured a panel with Tricia Romano, who wrote a book on the oral history of the Village Voice, Vivian Gornick, noted essayist, who wrote a famous book about her relationship with her mother and these walks they would take through Manhattan, and finally Ada Calhoun, who had written a book on the history of St. Mark's Place in New York. It was a very successful panel. It was a sellout at the Tustin Theater, and we've got the great fortune of bringing Ada Calhoun back, and we're calling this Deepwater Encore. So it's a sort of encore event where we're bringing someone who's already been at the festival as a kind of known quantity, as it were, but hosting them at Livingston Manor in this collaboration with Catskill Art Space. And the idea there is, you know, not everyone can make the festival, and not everyone can necessarily travel to Narrowsburg. So this takes us east of Narrowsburg by about 45 minutes, and we're pairing Ada with another writer called Susanna Cahalan. And they're talking about two books, a new book that Ada has written, her first novel, actually, since her appearance at last year's festival, and a biography that Susanna Cahalan has written about Rosemary Woodruff Leary. That was the wife of Timothy Leary. And it's really about her life in the counterculture, and a kind of fascinating biography, really, of this woman who's largely existed in the shadows of her husband, but absolutely deserves a spotlight of her own.
We come across that quite a bit. Women who who are in the shadows, but deserve a spotlight of their own. So good.
So the other event is another partnership, and this is with the Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. We're working with them on a series of three events. One took place last weekend. The next one is taking place on May the 10th. Very exciting event. The title of the series is Canary's Song. And this one is specifically looking at kind of challenges to the ecosystem and the environment in the age of floods and forest fires and ongoing abuse and exploitation of fossil fuels. But it features three writers and a special concert, which I'm very excited about. The concert involves someone who records the sounds of ponds, but not the sounds above ponds so much, but the sounds underneath the surface of a pond. So he takes a microphone, his name is David Rothenberg. He's a musician and composer. He takes a microphone and he suspends it below the surface of a pond and catches the noise of the pond life and incorporates that into a performance, a piece of music, alongside traditional instruments. So you hear the life, the living life of a pond incorporated into a soundscape. And he's going to be doing that on Saturday evening, the 10th of May, around 5:30, at Little Lake Erie in Narrowsburg. So hopefully it'll be a warm, mild evening and we can stand outside. Otherwise, umbrellas will be required. That event is going to follow a panel conversation, which features another Deepwater Festival alum, Jennifer Cabot. She's a writer, memoirist, who lives in the Catskills. She wrote a book called The Eighth Moon, which we featured at the festival last year. Her new one is called Night Shining. And it's a memoir that is contextualized in the history of floods in the Catskills region. So she'll be talking about that. Marguerite Holloway is another writer who will be on that panel. She has a new book called Take to the Trees. And Take to the Trees is really fascinating. It's about really how Margaret Holloway kind of found hope and self-discovery in America's forests, in periled forests, I should say. But she went to the forest to really find herself. And it's about the science of trees, but also about what trees give us in terms of our own well-being and psychology. She's a writer for the New York Times, The New Yorker. She teaches at Columbia University at the Graduate School of Journalism. And finally, a young writer called Justin Noble, an award-winning journalist, writes for Virginia Quarterly and Rolling Stone. He has a book called Petroleum 238, Big Oil's Dangerous Secret and the Grassroots Fight to Stop It. That was published last year. And he'll be talking about the sort of intersection of these things, trees, floods, really our abuse of fossil fuels. So, you know, that sounds kind of like a heavy lift, but I think all these people who I've spoken to are really just delightful, thrilling readers. They take real joy in nature and the environment. So although we are going to be talking about our imperiled planet, we're also going to be talking about things that can bring us pleasure in nature, and also why it's important to join the campaign, the fight, call it what you will, to help preserve and defend our ecosystem. That panel is free. But the concert at the pond is ticketed. The proceeds from that will go to Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. There will be a wine reception for that pond event. Hopefully some organic, sustainable wines, but we'll be celebrating the music of nature, the music of pond life with a drink, not from pond water, I hasten to add.
I wanted to ask you about the title of the three-part series with Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. You called it canary, like canary in the coal mine?
In terms of nature and the environment, I think it has a kind of double meaning. You know, the canary in the coal mine is the warning, you know, a warning that we sort of learned to take seriously. But it's also like an incredibly beautiful song that we're attracted to. So there's a sort of, you know, double meaning there. And I think, you know, a canary is something that is full of life, full of light, full of music. But it's also, you know, it's also the first sign often, certainly historically in the coal mines, of danger, you know, an impending threat. So that's the meaning of that title. I mean, the subtitle of the series adds a little bit of clarity, which is Dialogues on Earth, Justice, and the Road Ahead. And we really want to emphasize the road ahead because we want people to feel that there is agency. We all have agency in trying to change the outcome. Hopefully it's not too late. Yes. But, you know, whether it's too late or not, I think these conversations will shed light on what we can do individually to make change. Let me just add that we are, even though these are free events, apart from the pond concert, we are asking people to sign up so we can keep track of numbers. And you can sign up at eventbrite.com. It's available through the One Gram Books page on eventbrite.com.
Well, thank you, Aaron, for all you do. And thank you for taking the time to share this with WJFF listeners.
Thank you for giving me a platform to promote it. I appreciate it.
Thanks to culture reporter Valerie Manzi for that report. We'll take a break, and when we come back, filmmakers, listen up. The Too Short to Suck Film Festival is back, and we're talking with Ali Azos and Marcus Brooks about what's in store for this year's event. Coming up next on Radio Chatskill.
This week on This American Life, any fan of rom-coms will recognize this moment.
I was immediately, like, more attracted to him than I'd ever felt attracted to anybody before.
And this one.
And he just so very lightly pressed his lips up against mine.
Okay, but then, how about this one?
My very own red, bloody handprint is on his white wall.
Real life rom-coms. That's this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, it's one of the most unique film events happening right here in the Catskills, the Too Short to Suck Film Festival and Award Show. It's returning to Parksville for its second year, celebrating the art of storytelling in 2 minutes or less. Joining us today are Ali Azos and Marcus Brooks, the organizers behind the fast-paced, ultra-creative festival, to tell us more about the submissions they've seen so far, how filmmakers can still get involved before the deadline, and what's in store for this year's event on May 17th at New Memories in Parksville. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So for those folks who may not have heard of it yet, can you give folks a quick overview of what the Too Short to Suck Film Festival is all about? Allie.
Hi. We came up with this idea with the people who started PAC, which is Parksville Arts Center, and we decided to how could we get the community together and, you know, for anyone from any kind of like age group or, you know, demographic to be able to show some, you know, some of their work or just something fun. And so we asked people to submit films, and the only rule is 2 minutes or less. And
so last year got a lot of positive buzz. You decided to bring it back for a second year. Now I talked about the deadline. The deadline for submissions coming up is May 1st. That's later this week, right? Is it May already?
That's Thursday, yeah.
Right. So Thursday. How's the response been so far?
It's been really great. Yeah. We're just really excited about it. It's a lot, you know, it's been a lot of fun, and we, have received some great stuff, and we're hoping to receive more by the deadline.
Yeah, give us a sense of what you've received so far. Any emerging trends or types of surprises you've seen?
Yeah, well, you know, last year was really great. We had over 30 films that showed, so it was about an hour long altogether as far as like the film aspect of it. And one great thing that's sometimes overlooked is directly after the film festival part of it, we take a short break and then we come back and then we have a great interactive multimedia award show, which is hosted by two fabulous comics, and we actually record the event and show it on screens and show segments of the film and actually have an awards type ceremony that people can win best picture, best cinematography, and things like that. Last year, we got like a lot of great work, like narrative work, some artistic work, you know, animation, you know, puppetry, all of that. And I think people got really excited. So this year it looks like a lot of the people that have been submitting have started to kind of up their ante and kind of be a little more Hollywood with it. And now there's like the friendly back and forth about who's going to win what and who's going to do you know, the most Hollywood out production. But we have a lot of still, you know, kind of more homegrown grassroots 2 minute shorts as well. So it's a wide variety.
You brought along a couple of examples today to encourage filmmakers to submit. Now, one's from last year. This is called Tooth Fairy Vibes. What's this one about?
This is just about a little boy who's really excited about losing his first tooth.
All right, let's take a listen.
This is a very big day. On the second I wake up, even if mommy like a stress, like I'm just gonna look on my pillow. And hopefully I found like $1,000 on this year. Or 1,000 toys or something. I'm really hoping for money. Please, Tooth Fairy, I'm begging you. I really want money. So I have $21. $21. Okay, right now it's nighttime. Sorry about that. It's a very big day. Because I lost a tooth. So my heart is really out. I can't even breathe. My heart is beating so fast. I can't even breathe. Literally, I can't even breathe. If you want, I can go in your bank account overnight, and I can secretly come to your house, into your bed. I will be right next to someone or you. Maybe my tooth fell out. We were talking about the tooth fairy. And then at the last second, maybe my tooth will fall out, and then my tooth literally fell out. Done. So we were watching a show where these like YouTubers were playing Minecraft, and I was turning into a thing. And at the almost end of the movie, my tooth fell out randomly because I was wiggling it a lot, and then it just randomly popped out. And then I was like totally like my brain was like had to like do all these levels and stuff. So he didn't know what was going on, and he saw it was a murder phone. I thought I was falling apart, and then I was really screaming. My mom was like, what? Because he didn't hear I said my tooth fell out. And then I saw the tooth, and then it like kind of faded. I couldn't even breathe, like, we would like totally do this. We didn't take a video of it because I didn't know if it'd fall out white day. That's why I have a toothless smile. It's probably maybe ugly for you, but it's fine with me. I'm probably just gonna get a present or gum or something like or money or like. It's kind of scary when I look at it.
Oh, that was it. And that, by the way, that's the film. Two Fairy Vibes, 2 minutes. But I don't know about you. I'd rather see that than Thunderbolts. Just me. So that's from last year. And we're laughing the whole time during this, and we're just listening to it. I can only imagine the visuals behind it. Again, this is the Too Short to Suck Film Festival coming up on May 17th. You know, what do you think makes something in a short film stand out in such a tiny time frame?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. You know, I'm a filmmaker myself. I've been making films for, you know, 20, 30 years since I was a kid. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you have these grandiose ideas of what you're actually trying to put to film. And one of the challenges with the 2 minutes is you actually have to package it within 120 seconds of narrative or of just of work in general. So, you know, I think it's a very interesting task to do. So it's not only fun and exciting for filmmakers that have you know worked in the medium for a long time, but it's also fun for filmmakers that are new to the experience that get overwhelmed with needing to make a film that's a long narrative or a longer form. So I think the challenge is being able to capture a narrative or capture an idea in a short amount of time, but give it enough life that it is fun and it is enjoyable to watch.
We have another example. This one was submitted for this year's festival. It's called Extinction Point. Can you tell us who submitted that or what this one's about?
Drew Pinella submitted this one, and it's really intense. So
okay, let's take a listen.
Alvin, you're joking.
I'm not joking, Colt.
They slaughtered us, Riley. Wiped out entire cities. You've seen what
they've done. I've seen what happens to people who refuse to adapt. They die.
You're just going to kneel at their feet? Hope they throw you some scraps while they finish carving up the rest of us?
Not kneeling, Colt. I'm surviving. You keep fighting like we're going to win this war, but it's already over. The old world is gone. It burned, and we burned with it. There's nothing left to fight for. But there is a future. If we choose the right side.
Hash said the same thing, and now you.
Survival isn't about holding onto ghosts, Colt. It's about adapting.
Is that what we're calling it now? Selling out the last remaining shreds of what makes us human.
What makes us human? Doesn't matter.
Please, don't do this.
I already have.
What was that? Was that a snake? What happened? What happened at the end?
An alien or something?
I have to go see.
Cliffhanger.
I have to go and see. Well, that is definitely that more Hollywood sort of vibe you were talking about. Talk a little bit about how you encourage creators from all different backgrounds to participate. We saw kind of two or listened to two examples right there.
Well, I think nowadays it's easier to make a film on your own because of all the technology, and you can just do it on your phone. The one that we just listened to wasn't done on a phone, but it is possible to do, you know, everything on a phone.
Well,
and,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say it's really great, to speak to that point as well that, you know, nowadays with technology and being able to do things on phone, it really lowers the bar as far as the participatory aspect of people being able to put together films. So consequently, we've been able to get films from, you know, anyone from kids, you know, 9, 10-year-olds were running around in the back of a forest and shooting things or, you know, in their rooms and then being able to present them. And I think one of the powerful things of the night itself is the community that comes together and everyone's able to look at the films and everybody's able to participate. And it really brings a good sense of not only community, but also highlights the artistic talent that we have within the Parksville community.
Yeah, it really does play a part in that broader arts community in Parksville, the Catskills. On the night, the 17th, besides the screenings, you have an award show. What are some of the categories there for the award show.
So this is really funny because, you know, they kind of changed and we actually listed, or came up with the list, with everybody that's working, you know, with putting the film festival together and came up with stuff like best cinematography and, you know, best, short and best animation. And I believe there was one that was like the most, Parks Villian award, that was kind of just, you know, what was the most homegrown and homebrewn. But also another exciting aspect of the festival itself is we actually give out Memmys, which are, you know, 3D printed, like Oscar award like
trophies
that are actually artworks, that were actually NFTs, which are, you know, kind of minted on the blockchain, but then they also have a physical award that's a 3D, icon of the event itself. So I believe we gave out maybe 10 of them, last year. So, you know, a third of the people won one of these. So, you know, you got to throw your, film in the hat and see if you can be, part of that, award process.
Any dreams for the goals of this festival moving forward? Or you want to see it get bigger, or you know you always want to keep it under the 2 minutes, or do you want to incorporate some like longer form stuff into it? How do you see it evolving?
Well, the 2 minute kind of constraints are really fun, and it gives it a little bit of a challenge, but it also is a little it's easier for people who aren't professionals who are just you know dabbling in video or just having fun to be able to submit something. So the 2 minutes is a good number, but I'm not against expanding it, you know, or we could have maybe different categories.
Like additional categories that might be longer. Or
yeah, exactly. And another part of the festival is actually the awards show that, you know, whenever the awards show happens, the folks over at PAC, the Parksville Arts Center, have a whole list of characters that they bring along. So there's actually interactive dancing and singing and a lot of entertainment from that aspect. So it's kind of hard to take the show on the road from that perspective. So I think we'll always kind of house it in Parksville. You know, I think as it becomes larger and larger, we might need to break it into multi-days or kind of maybe over a weekend or kind of extend it from that perspective.
If it can work for Cannes, it can work for Parksville. The celebrities come to you.
Yeah.
If there are any filmmakers out there listening, what's your one piece of advice for getting that 2 minute film ready to submit before the deadline, which is Thursday?
I say just go for it. Like, even if it's not perfect in your mind, just submit it, because some of the best stuff that we got last year was just it was rough and it was pure and it was emotional. And one of the ones that won last year was 16 seconds long, so and it was like super impactful and really funny.
Wow.
Like,
so where can folks go to get more information about how to submit, more information on the event tickets?
Yeah, just everything is at ParksvilleArtsCenter.com/events. Everything from being, you can submit there. You can buy tickets there. Anyone who submits a film, gets a free ticket to the show.
And there is a $20 fee for submitting a film, but like Allie just mentioned, you'll get a free ticket to the show. And then the day of, the tickets will be $20. We have a fabulous event at the very beginning of the event, starting at 6 p.m., and it's a red carpet arrival. So we'll have a host of photographers shooting awesome. On the red carpet. So everybody dress your best in tuxedos and in sparkly things. And then the actual film screening will start at 7 p.m. and we'll take a slight break after that and then come back for the award show extravaganza at 8 p.m.
All right. Ali Azos and Marcus Brooks of the Too Short to Suck Film Festival and award show returning to Parksville for its second year on May 17th. It is a collaboration between the Conflux Gallery, New Memories, and the Parksville Arts Center. Thank you both so much for doing this. And it's such a great event to have in our backyard.
Yeah. And thank you so
thank
much,
you
for,
so
having
much
us.
For having us.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder, you can hear all of our local programming on our website. Go to wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you. who donate at wjffradio.org.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it. And thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at wjffradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, breezy and warm, sunny, followed by some increasing clouds this afternoon. There's an elevated fire threat in areas of dry brush due to those gusty winds and low humidity. High 75. Cloudy, breezy tonight, couple showers and a thunderstorm possible, mainly early, low 45. It's 11 o'clock.